Hello, and welcome to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne, here at 88.5 KRFY, Community Radio for North Idaho. I am Dr. Joanne, and I hope you'll enjoy the medical topics that I've chosen to present at 8 a.m. the first Monday of every month. You can also catch the show at 8 a.m. on the third Monday, and if you enjoy podcasts, you can listen to a podcast of the show at krfy.org. My guests today are Dr. Becky Meyer, Superintendent of the Lake Pontarea School District, and Joshua Barnes, Licensed Clinical Social Worker of Kinnickasoo Community Health, who will help me highlight October as Bully Prevention Month. Initially, a week in October was designated for Bully Prevention Month in 2006, and then was extended to the whole month in 2011. A National Day for Unity held each year on the third or fourth Wednesday in October will be October 15th this year. The day features bully prevention awareness and encourages students to get involved in planning and implementing the day's activities. The purpose of this campaign in general is to unite for kindness, courage, and inclusion to prevent students from being bullied. I chose this topic as a way to feature children's mental health, enhancing their self-esteem and self-reliance. I'd like to recognize Susie Perez, one of the hosts of the KRFY Morning Show, and I call her my executive producer. Hi, Susie.
Good morning, Dr. Joanne, and thanks for hosting Medical Musing. You know, I wanted to let the listeners know a little bit about you. You're a longtime KRFY volunteer, previously hosting segments of Otto's Eclectic Mix, now hosting Medical Musing the first and third Monday of the month at 8 a.m. You're a retired pediatrician who has lived in Sandpoint since 2010. You also previously worked at the pediatric practice in Columbus, Ohio for over 30 years and then covered the Sandpoint Pediatrics. As the medical spokesperson for the Ohio chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, you contributed to print, online media, radio, and television. You're also a mother of four children, and we're fortunate to have you part of our Monday morning local programming.
Thank you, Susie. Dr. Becky Meyer is here with me to discuss programs that the Lake Pontarea School District utilizes to focus on the social, emotional development of their students. I know that many of our listeners know you, but please tell the audience a bit about yourself.
Well, I started here in 1993, and I worked in the school district as a counselor. Byron Lewis, who's since passed away, I love that man from Clark Fork. He hired me, what we used to call Voc Ed, but now it's career technical education. He hired me as a career and college counselor way back when, and we were with Wes Bonner as well. So Priest River was here, and it was a big district. I went to every school in the district my first year, and then I was a counselor, Southside Elementary, Priest Lake Elementary, and Priest River Lamana High School. Then I went to Sandpoint High School. Then I was Lake Pontarea Alternative High School principal. Then I was the Sandpoint High School principal. Then I was the assistant soup for a couple of years when Sean Woodward was the superintendent. And then he encouraged me to apply for an open superintendent position in Lakeland. I got it, which I was not expecting, and then I was there for 6 years, and then this is my fourth year back here as the superintendent of the Lake Pontarea School District, so lots of fun things over the years.
That's quite a varied career in 32 years. Wow. Great experience. There are several programs in the district that interface well with bully prevention efforts. They include One Trusted Adult, the Zones of Regulation program, and the wonderful work of the guidance counselors in our schools. These programs focus on the mental health of our school population and the personnel that teach them. Since one element of bully prevention is to speak up, encouraging those who are bullied to tell a responsible adult, the One Trusted Adult program is a wonderful way for students to be comfortable speaking to an adult when they need to report bullying. As I read, the One Trusted Adult program is on a mission to ensure that every young person on this planet can name at least one trained, motivated, and committed trusted adult at home and at school. This program really builds relationships between students and adults. So, Dr. Meyer, how and when did the district implement this program?
Well, a few years ago, every year I have a theme, and 2 years ago we had the theme, let's really work on, and had to do with school safety, which in part is part of bullying as well. As you know, acts of violence across the country, unfortunately, have risen, and often the perpetrator will say that it stemmed from bullying, so that there is a great connection to us wanting to make sure to alleviate as much bullying as possible, not only for each individual student and the families, but also to keep our schools safe. So a couple of years ago, I rolled out the program One Trusted Adult and said, let's work to really increase the number of connections with students and adults. As a side note, student connection is one of our pillars of our strategic plan. So it's one of the main focuses. So we ran out that and everyone did a baseline. They surveyed the students. Can you name one trusted adult? And it was pretty low, you know, in the 60s. And so we really worked the entire year on how do you build relationships with kids, connections, and how do we work to be able to identify which students need to build that connection. And it's great if they have friends, and it's great if they can tell their friends things, but research proves that if you have an adult, then the follow-through happens. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, they don't have an adult, and they just tell a student, they listen and they can vent, but it doesn't really have any follow-up that helps to mediate the issues. So in this case, we did a lot of work that first year, again working last year. And I can happily say at the end of last year, we just did a report to the school board and 99.3% was our percentage at the end of the year of students K through 12 in our school district who had one trusted adult that they felt that they could connect with, identify with, and talk to.
That's truly wonderful. Do the counselors and teachers, or the teachers and counselors, and then the students get a refresher each year? And then how are new students integrated into the program?
Oh, great question. And it is every single, I do want to point out also, it could be the custodian. There is our campus security officers. A lot of them are identified. Several bus drivers. You know, they're the first ones to pick up those little kiddos in the morning and ask them how their day was and really build a connection. So there's any employee in the entire school district can be identified. And of course, their parents always typically are their one trusted adult, but we want to be able to identify somebody at school as well. So I just wanted to be able to point out, I don't want to diminish the fact that parents are really their first connection. But we do every year, the counselors, we have an amazing counseling department, as you said earlier, K through 12. It's just amazing what they do for our kids. And what I really like about the department is proactively, they really focus on what can we do to build the skills and what we call the protective factors, building resiliency and social skills, social awareness, all of that. How do they build that for students? So as they go up through life, they have those skills to be able to bond with people and also resiliency to make it through some of the hurdles that will happen. Those counselors really work to provide the skills for the kids, but then also training for the adults so that they know if it doesn't come naturally to them how to build these connections, they are the ones that can help with that as well.
So the student and the adults aren't assigned, really. They sort of gravitate to each other.
Definitely not. The whole purpose of this one trusted adult is that they can self-identify. It doesn't have to be their classroom teacher. It doesn't have to be, you know, their counselor. It doesn't have to be a specific person. They get to identify. And the beauty of it is this is the person that then we as a school know who are they identifying, how, and that person then, whether it's the custodian, the admin assistant, the librarian, a parapro, a different teacher, anybody in that school then knows, oh, this student sees me as their trusted adult. They start to ask them questions and, you know, oh, how was your weekend? How was your soccer game? How was the play that you were in? What did you guys do for? And so they start to be able to just really, you know, keep that blossoming up so that they even build a deeper connection.
So do you do a training session like in the summer, in August before school starts when you have a new program like this? Or
No.
Or throughout the year?
Yeah, throughout the year. And then also just to go back to one thing, when you have new staff, how do you integrate them into the fold to make sure they understand it? We have every year back from when I was a principal, way back when in 2001 at Lake Pend'Oreille High School, I always have run a mentee program, which means it's teachers and staff that are new to the profession, mm-hmm. either new teachers or new to our district. And I've run it every year since then. At every building or district I've been at, I just feel like it's really important to create an opportunity for new people to understand your culture and your climate, what's important, what's the focus of that school or district, and just helping them build the skills in their toolbox. And you know, as a pediatrician, that you just need to have so many options that you can reach in and pick for. And so this mentee team meeting, we have it every month for the entire school year. So every year, all the new staff that are going to be working with students come to a mentee team meeting. This is where we teach them, how do you connect with kids? How do you increase the opportunity for you to get to know students on a personal level, build that relationship, build the trust, foundation for them to be able to be the one trusted adult?
I was interested when you said janitors and the bus, and because so many episodes of bullying can be on a bus mm-hmm. or in the basement of the school, or my son used to forget to bring his homework home, and we would always have to bang on the windows or the door, and became very good friends with the janitor mm-hmm. because that was the way we could get into the school
right.
after school.
Yeah. And the custodians are around, in my experience, for years and years, the custodians have been around, and they just start to make friends with some of the students that just feel isolated, or they maybe aren't in with a big crowd. And I've had a lot of successful relationships yes. that I've seen between custodians and students that needed to connect with somebody.
I can see that. That's a great opportunity. Susie, do you have any comments?
Well, I was just thinking, how do you communicate this whole program to the parents, the students, the teachers, the adults in the school community so that everyone's on board and knows about it? And then how do you monitor? I mean, how do you do training for the one trusted adult people and what they would be looking for? Just, the furthering of it.
Yeah. Well, the way that we advertise it is we send it home. We did when it first rolled out a couple of years ago, I rolled it out and talked to the staff at the August Welcome Back assembly, or I guess it's not an assembly, just the meeting, and every staff member in the entire district comes. So I rolled it out as this is our focus this year. So there were several, every single month there's tidbits going out, try this, do this. And it really is not, keeping it super simple, mm-hmm. it's not about teaching them counseling skills, just classroom teachers or custodians or bus drivers or any of these other employees. It's not meant to add on an additional layer of you have to learn this. It's meant to add on, like, recognize when a student's trying to make a connection with you. Recognize when a student looks like they're by themselves or they're looking different than they do normally. Like, are they looking like they're depressed or lonely, or they're not looking the same as they normally do? Like, oh, this student usually is chipper and now it looks like they're sad. Like, what's going on? And just recognizing the humanness of each person and trying to make those connections really be the most important thing we do. So yes, we have the curriculum, and yes, we need to clean the school, and yes, we need, we need to get all the information in the computer when you're at the front desk, but stopping and pausing and really thinking, making this connection and being connected with students and making sure they feel connected to the school and each other has to be our most important thing. It really does.
And the program itself has been research-based, I've read, and mm-hmm. it has professional development trainings and then advisory curriculum. And do the students do any of the leadership course piece with that? Or?
Well, each school has a leadership team. They call it different things, student council, student leadership. Sometimes it's you know, the student ambassadors at some. So each school has it differently, and those students obviously know what this is. Susie asked, how do we advertise it and keep the parents and the community in the know? Well, I report 3 times a year to the school board, and so that's a public record. And then that goes on to the website where they can see my superintendent report. And it has fall, winter, and spring. And we just survey the students. This last year, we just mandated a fall. So beginning of the year baseline, and then the end of the year, how did we end up? A few schools did continue with the mid-year, but it is a pretty big undertaking to survey every single student. Something that I think is important to note, and then we let families know in the loop. We send it home and say, hey, this is what our one trusted adult program is. I report it out to the staff and to the school board, and so it becomes public knowledge, and then hopefully everyone knows what a great job we did. But one thing I do want to highlight, staff are really take this to heart. After the fall, and we take our baseline survey to say, hey, how many students are not able to identify a trusted adult? The staff really does a tremendous job at working at, and each school does it differently. These students really need to be able to make a connection with an adult, and we go out of our way to make sure that those students feel like they're in the fold and they're part of the school community. And each school does that differently, but that's why our number by the end of the year, 99.3, is amazing. And that could include students that had just moved in that hadn't even had a chance to build up a relationship. So we're just really pleased and happy that we're able to provide that connection for that many students every year.
Wow, that's wonderful. Let's focus on the new program then at Lake Pendere School District, the zones of regulation that you're implementing this school year. Again, I read that it's an empowering instructional tool to build safe, supportive environments that foster learning and well-being for all. How are you integrating this program into the school district?
Well, I wrote a PAFE grant, a big shout out and thank you to PAFE. I wrote a very large, what's called a strategic initiative grant for PAFE, and I was granted it, so I'm very thankful for that. And that is to really look at what student behavior and how, again, do we connect with kids and help students to identify their behavior, learn better self-regulation, better empathy, and help to make those connections again for our school district, which then helps in the classroom so that all the students can focus on learning. So you talk about this being, bullying awareness month. This really helps once we work with the zones of regulation, because students are able to identify in this program, which PAFE has funded, a behavior specialist for the district, the curriculum for every single school, and we're going to do training for leadership teams at the elementary schools. It really identifies, just to give you a little more specific about zones of regulation, there's 4 zones. There's the blue zone, yellow zone, red zone, green zone. And it really looks at what are the emotions and the feelings that they have in each of these zones? What's the energy level? And how can the student identify which zone they're in? Identify what triggered them, if they're in the red zone, what triggered you to feel, panicked or angry or frustrated or terrified or just this really red? It's high energy, high emotion. And where do they want to be? And what zone do they want to be? And what strategies can they have to self-regulate and be able to calm themselves down, talk it through with somebody, an adult? And this program is really going to help us to have common language throughout the entire school district. So that, and several schools already use the program, but it's maybe not at every single school that we need it to be at. And that every single adult, staff person, employee doesn't have the same language. So it's really going to help with us as a school district to have that common language.
And if children are more aware of themselves and are calmer, then they can learn better too.
They can learn better. And you hear, the elementary think tank that I work with, and that's a group of teachers from all schools in the elementaries, and they identify and talk to their peers, and they're really out-of-the-box thinkers. They're ones that say, how can we address this problem in a new way? They I have an elementary and a secondary think tank that I work with throughout the year. And it's really to help. I don't have all the answers. I don't think any one person does, but with a lot of brains that think differently and different perspectives, they said last year, really for the last couple of years, our number one issue that elementary staff is identifying is behaviors, student behaviors that become a little bit out of control or distracted from other people in the classroom. And we don't want to keep sending students out, sending kids home. I have a philosophy of as least amount of out-of-school suspensions as possible because we are an educational institution. That means our job is to teach students. They are supposed to be learning, whether it's behavior, academics, you know, social, emotional connection. All of that needs to be stuff that we teach during the day. So if a student has a misbehavior and we send them home, that is not going to help us teach behavior for the next time. So we have a very, very low incident of out-of-school suspensions compared to the rest of the state. And that's because we really take our job seriously of teaching the student how to identify. And this zones of regulation will help. What triggered you? What zone are you in? How do you label what you're feeling right now? What emotion do you have? What is, you know, your reaction, and how can we then calm you down, center you again so that you can be in a spot where you can get along with your peers, you know, if we need to fill, you know, mediate an issue, and also be in a spot where you can learn again and your brain is open to learning. Mm-hmm. We as adults know if you're in, you know, frustration or you're angry or you're hyped up or you're over anxious or even overjoyed or elated at too high of an energy level, you can't be in a spot where you learn. We need students in that spot, and we as adults have to sometimes help students to realize how to get to that spot.
Basically, over the last 5 years, I guess since the pandemic, over 80% of U.S. schools reported in 2022 on the negative impact of the pandemic on child well-being and self-regulations. So kids seem to be struggling more to manage their feelings and mental health and are more disruptive necessarily. And when they need additional social, emotional, and behavioral support, it's wonderful that you've instituted both these programs, basically. How did the children actually learn to manage their feelings?
Well, this zones of regulation training is all about how do we remove the student. It could be in the back of the classroom. By the end of this year, several staff have calming corners, what they call calming corners. It's just a place to, you know, take a pause, reset, identify what your emotion is, what zone you're in, and then how to self-regulate. What strategies can we use? There could be little manipulatives, fidgets. There could be little squishy balls. There could be where you stand on and there's a little stair-stepper thing. There's all sorts. Some people just read a book. Taking deep breaths. There's lots of strategies that this program comes with and that the counselors have, and really just be able to, the starting point for us is to be able to have students self-identify, self-regulate, and then once there's repetition and they learn this, then they're able to, you know, with the help of adult from the beginning, and then they're able to complete this process their own, to where I've seen it successful where students actually give themselves time in the calming corner. They recenter themselves. They are able to identify. They look at the wall. What are the strategies I use? And then they back themselves down to a spot where they're ready to learn again. They go back into the classroom. Sometimes they have to go out of the classroom, could be to the zones of regulation room, could be a reset room. Farman Sidwell calls it the pause room because that's their acronym. So it's whatever they need in the beginning. And then eventually it goes to where they can do that in the classroom. And then like we as adults, you know, healthy, centered, balanced adults can do that even when you're sitting in the same spot and you're in a really tough situation and you're
a few deep breaths.
Internally, you're doing tapping or you're doing your deep breathing or you're getting yourself into your positive affirmations and you're visualizing that positive outcome. All of these strategies as adults we can do in the moment where we're at. And that's what I want for our students. I want our students, wherever they are right now on this continuum, how do we teach them where they're at and then keep moving them toward a healthy, really balanced, where they are more in tune with themselves and their emotions. I mean, I truly believe that's going to build the empathy, Dr. Joanne, in our district, which will then, to your point, decrease bullying and harassment.
So do they get like the charts or the zones of regulation being blue, yellow, red, and green? I'm imagining some little chart goes home so that the child can talk to their parents about what they're learning then.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll have a push where we're doing some parent awareness, and a parent awareness where we'll do an activity where the parents can come in and learn more about it. And again, thank you to PAFE. I can't thank them enough for this huge grant that they gave us for us to instill this program. It's really going to help us as a school district. We'll send it to parents, but also to your point, these are in the calming corner. So mm-hmm. students become familiar. These are in the reset room or the pause room or the zones of regulation room. These are ones where teachers really know and can identify for students because they can help them talk through it. Our recess duties, all of our custodians, our bus drivers, like I talked about, everyone in the school district will be able to identify this and be able to do some activity where they themselves can be able to talk it through with students so that they're familiar with it. And we have just this common language, common way of approaching kids. And our common goal is to get students as calm as possible back into the teaching and learning brain, and they're back in the classroom as quick as possible.
Sounds like we should send all of our children and grandchildren to the Lake Pend'Oreille School District.
Well, I am a little biased, but I would say yes.
I was just thinking when you're talking about teaching, the teachers have to learn a lot about this mm-hmm. and buy into it. And I know they do because it's really going to be helpful. But young children in the elementary, even kindergarten, first grade, that's really where to start. Yep. And you don't start with the cognitive. Maybe it's stories. Maybe there's puppets. Maybe that it's through play that they learn to self-regulate and notice in themselves when things are spinning out and I don't feel comfortable. I'm going to tell my teacher, I need help. I need the blue room or whatever, yes. the corner to relax. So yeah. It's different throughout the district. So the training is comprehensive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you brought in the play and also with puppets or a story or something where it's the focus is off of the student for a second. It helps them to calm down when they don't feel like they're getting blamed or that they're in trouble. And then you teach them through those other opportunities, and then they start to identify and self-identify for themselves, and that helps us just be more in tune with ourselves as well.
That's interesting, because one of the bully prevention websites I was looking at has a whole program for kids and then a different one for teens, and in both of them they have either play acting or puppets or to act out the roles of being a victim or being a bully.
And to see themselves in a story.
Yep.
You know, am I the hero? Am I the helper? Am I the person that needs a little support?
And the counselors are just, the elementary counselors especially, they're just phenomenal at this. They know art therapy, play therapy, connection with young kids. They just have that skill, which is probably why they're an elementary counselor. And our new district behavior specialist is going to be Summer Tigert, and she was a principal at Kootenai, where we have our elementary behavior program, which is called Beacon. So she's super familiar with that. She also was an SEC teacher, which means Services for Exceptional Children. We used to call it, special education, but we don't call it that anymore. So she really has worked with a lot of students with behavior and disabilities and ones, just that. She understands this entire program. She's going to be setting up the system throughout the entire district, along with Michelle Blumenberg, who is going to be in charge of our PBIS, Positive Behavior and Interventions and Supports. That is a state program. The state pays for our training for that. And this is going to be several years this has been in our district, but we really just amped it up in the last couple of years. We have elementary schools that are in Tier 2 and Tier 3 years of training. Our middle school, Sandpoint Middle School, started it last year. And so this, in combination with the zones of regulation and just district behavior support with one trusted adult, all ties together nicely, really to support our staff and our students to really address the entire child and everything, teaching and learning, student well-being, everything.
Yeah, your guidance counselors are very well trained in these different programs, so I can see that they can support the children, the youth, in exceptional ways. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Meyer, for contributing your program and your expertise. These programs are so helpful for all students, and the entire Lake Pendere School District is so fortunate to have these mental health curricula available to them.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Joanne.
I really enjoyed meeting you.
You too.
This is 88.5 KRFY Pendere. Our next guest to discuss bullying and Bully Prevention Awareness Month is Joshua Barnes, LCSW, I always do that wrong, at Kinnexu Community Health. You are listening to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne. But Josh, why don't you introduce yourself to our listening audience?
All right. Thanks, Joanne. Thanks for having me. So my name is Josh Barnes. I grew up here in Sandpoint. I graduated from Lake Pendere High School in 2002. And I've been in clinical practice here as a clinical social worker for about 6 years now.
Great. I'm going to give just a quick definition of bullying, just because that's what we're talking about. Bullying is an unwanted, aggressive behavior, real or perceived, where there is an imbalance of power and a repeated behavior. Both the child who is bullied and the bullying may have serious, lasting problems. Increased risk of suicide, school problems, trouble in adulthood with job and relationship security, along with even drug and alcohol abuse. We also remember we are talking about, it's interesting in my reading, some of the sites said, don't call them victims, call them someone who is bullied. Don't call it anti-bullying, call it bully prevention.
Okay.
And then, of course, the perpetrator, which was what I used when I talked about bullying, is the one who bullies. And then there's witnesses and bystanders who are also important to the process. We know that anxiety and sadness among school children have occurred forever, as have incidents of bullying. But there's been so much written recently about children's mental health, especially since the 2020 pandemic, and the increasing use of screens, whether they be smartphones, game consoles, or whatever, and the internet in general. Multiple sources note that 1 in 5 or 20% of students are bullied at some time, and about 16% have been a victim of cyberbullying. Many of the projects were created prior to the pandemic. In fact, in the early 2000s, I gave a bully prevention presentation to several different school districts, primarily so teachers would be more aware of the problem and be able to help their students understand the concept and how to overcome this problem. Then one of the main teaching points for kids was talk, walk, and squawk. Stand up to the bully, walk away, and then tell someone. But many kids don't want to tell an adult because they don't want to be labeled as a tattletale. Telling in this situation is getting help. That's why I was so pleased to hear about the One Trusted Adult program that Dr. Meyer discussed. But I'd love to hear more about your practice, so why don't you tell us how clients get referred to you, the age range of your patients, and, you know, basically, are some of them victims or bullies?
Yeah, so I work over at Kinnexu Community Health, and a lot of the clients that I see mostly, early teenage age, probably 12 and up. I also see a lot of adults. The way that we generally get referrals is through either self-referral or a referral from maybe a clinician, or sometimes through probation and parole, sometimes schools. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of collaborations with organizations like Lilybrook and other community organizations. But the primary referral we usually get is kind of a self-referral from the client or the family.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that as far as the client population, it probably just depends on how honest the client is, whether they're in that victim or perpetrator, if we use those labels, role. Like you said, it's often part of a cycle. And so a lot of times, you know, kids who are perpetuating bullying behaviors have also been the victims of that. As you alluded to, that, you know, that kind of person first language, it's great. It puts the focus on the child and not the behavior, but it's often kind of hard to remember to use that because we're used to these terms.
Yeah. Victim and perpetrator.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I wonder if many kids have associated problems like oppositional defiant disorder or obsessive compulsive ADD, especially, or school learning problems. And then they feel, if they're the perpetrator, they suddenly feel they're in power and they never were in power before.
Sure. I think that that's often the genesis of a lot of bullying behavior, is that kind of getting that power somewhere, whether it's that the child doesn't feel very empowered in their home, or maybe they've been a part of that dynamic at school. I think in some ways it's similar to why children gravitate toward games. They can have a lot of control in a game, right? Mm-hmm. And when you're a kid, you don't have a lot of control in your life generally. And so it's easy to see how that could be a big driver behind, you know, kind of wanting to establish control over another person, particularly one who might appear to be vulnerable or weak.
Do you find that they're usually youth, I guess, or teenage to young adults, do they stay in therapy? Is there a problem with, you know, being compliant?
You know, generally, no. I mean, once they get to us, they're usually have some level of motivation toward therapy, or if not them, you know, their teacher or their probation officer certainly does. But yeah, that's often a big part of what dictates the course of therapy, is how involved the kid or the parents, if that's part of the equation, want to be involved. And generally, once they're in there, I found that they're usually pretty motivated to learn skills and to work on things, especially if behaviors have kind of created a situation where they're experiencing punishment and things like that. They're interested in avoiding that.
So the parents seem, at least in the cases that come to you, that they're aware that there's something wrong. It's so interesting when we read about drugs and alcohol and kids getting into drugs. It's like the parent didn't know until they cleaned their room or something like that. But usually there is some kind of a change in behavior or withdrawal or what do you see?
There are a lot of things that we can look to for that. Specifically with bullying, you know, one of the things that we would really look at generally is, you know, if you've noticed that the child has kind of a noticeable decrease in self-esteem or social engagement, those can be pretty good indicators. If the child is kind of withdrawing from school or other social experiences, some of the other things that we might want to look for are, you know, if the child has unexplained injuries, of course, that might be a big red flag. If a child loses or has clothing destroyed, books destroyed, electronics, things like that, it might be a good indicator that someone's taking things from them. And also, if a child has things like frequent headaches, stomach aches, that can also be a really good indicator that there's some mental health things going on that maybe the child doesn't know how to articulate, or maybe is afraid to articulate, but maybe feel more comfortable saying, you know, I've got a stomach ache, Mom, or I've got a headache. I don't really want to go to school today.
Can't go to school today. Yeah. We had someone in our family who, for some reason, some kids decided that he did something that they didn't think was good. And all of a sudden he sat down at the lunch table with all the kids he normally sat with, and they got up and left. And, you know, he ended up eating with the school counselor for a while. And then one day we actually did seek a counselor, and he saw a counselor for a little while. But then one day he called my husband and said, it's over. So they might have been picking on someone else then or something like that.
Sure.
But it's so interesting how some is, you know, actual nastiness in words, some is physical, and then, of course, some is just excluding someone.
Right. Well, we tend to see some differences there as far as gender goes, too. With the boys, it tends to be a little bit more of that physical, kind of what you would expect, the roughhousing. And then with the girls, it's a little bit more of that verbal rumors, and like you said, that kind of intentional exclusion can often be a big one, right? Don't let her come hang out with us kind of thing. And that's, of course, you know, that's not a total explanation. There are certainly girls who bully physically and boys who bully emotionally, but, yeah, that's kind of the standard breakdown as far as the research shows us.
That's interesting. What would you call your best success? And then what situation couldn't you improve? It sounds better than failure.
Oh gosh. Yeah. That's a great question. Well, I think my best success is just, you know, in having long-term clients and being able to see their growth over time, right? A lot of the clients that I work with come from pretty difficult backgrounds, and maybe they've had years of traumatic experiences, various levels of neglect, things like that. Maybe they've been involved in the foster care system or other situations that were not ideal. And so I would say that, yeah, that's my biggest success is just in seeing the growth of the client over time. And then, of course, it's really nice to hear from clients. You know, every once in a while I'll hear from an old client just kind of out of the blue and, oh, hey, you know, it's nice to talk to you. You helped me out, you know, a couple years ago. And that's a really rewarding thing, too.
Or graduation, if you see their picture in the paper or run into their parent or someone who knows them and,
sure.
You know, so-and-so just graduated and he or she is going on to do this or do that. That's always makes you feel good. In fact, as a pediatrician, people would, I would see them or sometimes it's even social media and I just say, you know, a great job or just one of my patient moms had a knee replacement. And so I, you know, sent some little thing and, you know, you get back, oh, you know, Dr. Royans, you were such a wonderful, you know, doctor and things like that. So that always gives you that extra pat on the back.
Sure.
Should I tell my story about my husband? He's an attorney and he would go into the bank and the bank teller would go, oh, are you related to Dr. Royans? You know, and the bank teller's like 23 or something, 24. And you know, she'd go, oh, she was such a good doctor. And he always told the story and went, no one ever said that about me as an attorney. They didn't come up to me on the street and go, oh, what a great attorney you were. Now they might have, but
sure,
you know,
sure.
It makes a good story the other way.
I have a JD, so I can empathize a little bit with that. Yeah.
Bullying is so circular, too. I mean, the more one is bullied, the more they might be bullied because they're seen as weak or they cry or...
Right.
And then the other person, the perpetrator, the one who bullies, increases their feeling of power.
Sure. Yeah, I'd say that was definitely true in my own life. I had a lot of older male friends, and I tended to be sort of the youngest and maybe the most physically targeted in my friend group. And so, you know, generally it was things that maybe we would consider pretty innocuous, but there were times when it was pretty tough, and I certainly was impacted by it. And I can recall, you know, in that kind of middle school age where we know this stuff kind of peaks. You know, there were some experiences where I was less than kind to some other students. And you know, as I reflect on that, it brings a lot of sadness. And I can see that was, you know, I think my effort of trying to get that power, right, that I didn't feel like I had in my friend group or socially.
It's interesting because that feeling of exclusion really does make a lot of kids sad and then makes them retreat even more because they don't feel like they can speak up. So I think even the, you know, talk, walk, and squawk is the kind of the same thing. I mean, you have to be able to stand up, even if it's not intentional bullying. It's just that the person themselves doesn't feel included, I guess.
Sure, yeah.
Is that the primary reason that middle school and high school students seek help, or you actually said because of the population you have a whole lot of varying reasons, but...
Yeah, I mean, I don't tend to see a lot of students specifically around bullying. That's probably more of a peripheral issue. Mm-hmm. I would say that a lot of the students that I've seen who are in the LGBTQ community have experienced outright bullying, discrimination. But that would be probably the exception to the rule.
Mm-hmm.
With a lot of the kids that I see, they've experienced some, but that's not kind of their primary driver for coming to therapy.
Well, I think some of the problems too are that teenagers or in youth in general might lack awareness of how they influence other self-esteem.
Very much, yeah. And now we have so many interfaces with technology, social media. One of the things that's so harmful about the cyberbullying aspect is that unlike for even my generation, you know, 20 years ago or so, a lot of that stuff turned off when we went home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one was going to call the home phone and you know, get through your parents and then bully you on the phone. But these days, you know, especially if kids have unfettered access to social media, it's a 24/7 opportunity for peers to keep that abuse cycle going.
Definitely. I'm going to do a little break. You are listening to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne on 88.5 KRFY. I'm speaking with Josh Barnes, if you just tuned in, who's a licensed clinical social worker, and we are talking about Bully Prevention Awareness Month and, in general, the help that you can get through Kinnickzu Community Health. It's interesting, and bullying can occur anywhere, the school, the playground, the bus, the home, but then, of course, now we're kind of focusing on cyberbullying. So it so often happens where a parent isn't aware, and there it can be so harmful. There are fake personas, exclusionary language, sexually explicit pictures, blackmailing. There's so much opportunity now. Even kids who play video games interact with online personalities. How do they know that the person's real and they're really another 13-year-old or 14-year-old? So how do you approach that? Or have you had many children or youth who are worried about the fact that the internet is so harmful to some of them?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had several instances, unfortunately, over the years where, you know, children that we've been working with have been targeted by that, specifically by, you know, explicit images that have been shown around peer groups. And I think it really starts with having that education with the kids, probably as early as fifth or sixth grade. Mm-hmm. And that may seem a little early, but as I've worked with a lot of kids in that age group, they're already being exposed to much of this. And so starting that education really early and routinely checking in on the internet habits of our children, what are they looking at? What are they interfacing with? Making sure that their online friends are ones that we kind of know of and can vet. Mm-hmm. And just being really explicit with them about some of the dangers that are involved there.
I mean, because that's something that can be so hidden and yet, again, so harmful to the child. It's interesting that the children or the youth, are so interested in using the internet very early. And again, as you said, even 20 years ago, we didn't have that. And now kids are asking for cell phones at age, probably younger than 10 or whatever, but certainly 12, 13, middle school. It would be interesting to go over to the middle school or ask Mr. Penrose, how many kids have cell phones and do they have a program now? A lot of schools are talking about putting, the cell phone away. I had one school that I went to actually that had like a shoe bag on the back of the door and you have to put your cell phone in the shoe bag. Of course, if the parents have an emergency, that's why they feel it's important for the child to have the phone. And that might, be a little deterrent to that. But anything else you want to say about cyberbullying? It's just so, invasive, I guess.
Yeah, again, I think like so many aspects of the internet, there's good things about it and bad things, right? And it's one of the things that we see a lot with the teenage population in particular is that they are aware of mental health issues almost to a fault, meaning that we'll see a lot of them sometimes who are coming in and self-diagnosing because there's just enough information out there online to sort of make a potential diagnosis. But often that information is not accurate and it's often not complete. And so that's another one of the things that I would just really caution is helping kids to find accurate sources of information to go to and trusted adults to talk to, like you referenced with the One Trusted Adult program. Mm-hmm. There's so many areas of potential information out there, and not all of them are equal in what mm-hmm. they're going to be bringing.
I know that we've discussed a little bit, or I told you about all the different sites that I saw online, and I was really impressed with many of them. The Pacer Center in Minnesota was created in 1977 for parents of children with disabilities, and then they kind of morphed into the National Bullying Prevention Center. There's even a government... The government one, bully.gov. There's a dot, oh, here we go, stopbully.gov site and Stomp on Bullying. And the tagline for that is kindness is free and the hate, which I thought was a very interesting, tagline. So there's an awful lot of information. I think mainly the education here is to know that there are great services that you provide and that parents need to be aware, basically, because if parents stick their head in the sand, then often the child doesn't get the help they need.
Sure.
Tell us, you also noted that you're working with the school system on dialectical behavior therapy. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. So like I said, I graduated from Lake Pontary High School back in 2002. And next month here in September, we're going to be launching a dialectical behavior therapy group at LPO High School. And so that will primarily focus on teaching some of the students there just basic skills around mindfulness, communication, emotional regulation skills, affect tolerance skills, just very applicable things that they can use throughout their lives on kind of a daily basis.
So will you have like workshops with the teachers first or mainly with the students, or how does that go?
So this will actually be a every week interactive group with the students, myself, and then Stacy Luce, who's also a therapist with us, who works embedded in the school. She's full-time with the middle schools and high schools in the district. And so we'll meet with the students every Friday for about an hour. And there will be a light homework component, nothing too much, but it'll build upon itself week after week. And hopefully give them a really nice kind of baseline of different skills that they can use mm-hmm. as they're encountering different things.
It sounds like those skills, again, dovetail so well with teaching a student to speak up to a bully and to have, you know, better self-esteem and better social emotional kind of regulation. So that sounds like it really, really does coordinate with Dr. Meyer's programs that she has in the whole school district.
Yeah, that would be the hope. So much of the foundation of so much that we do in therapy is around noticing, right? Noticing what we're feeling, what we're thinking. And so that's a big foundation of DBT generally, is that mindfulness aspect. And once the students can recognize what's happening around them in their own bodies, in their own thoughts and emotions, they can do a much better job of seeking help, helping their peers, calling out others when they're behaving in ways that aren't productive or healthy. And I think that's a big piece of it too, is just that education around like we can speak up when we see something that we don't feel is right, and trying to get away from that old model of, you know, don't be a tattletale kind of thing.
Yeah, it's hard to, you know, explain even the difference between tattletale and telling,
right?
You know, one of the sites kind of said, well, you're not being a tattletale, you're just telling an adult. And then the words they used to say tell sounded like you were a tattletale.
Right.
So, I mean, teaching the students to be able to stand up for themselves, I think, is really what we're talking about. Is there anything we've missed in your practice that we should know about?
We're really trying to expand services over at Kiniksu. We've got a great team that we're building. We're currently doing adult groups at our new clinic on Baldy Mountain Road. And then we'll also be starting those groups in the school district and just trying to continue to build out as many partnerships as we can with the community, get more groups going, and just really trying to serve as many different aspects of the community as we possibly can.
That's wonderful. It was interesting when I was doing that reading, the Pacer Center actually has two groups called Kids Against Bullying and Teens Against Bullying. And the Teens Against Bullying actually had worksheets where they were supposed to put down what the problem is and then, you know, how they would solve it and things. So that was a really good resource, I think. So basically, bully prevention efforts center around empowering kids to understand bullying, to speak up for themselves, to stand up to the bully, whether they are someone who's being bullied or even being a bystander, then telling a teacher, a parent, or another trusted adult. A sincere thank you go to Dr. Becky Meyer from the Lake Pontary School District and to Joshua Barnes, licensed clinical social worker from Kiniksu Community Health, for sharing their knowledge about bullying, bully prevention efforts, and basically the social emotional support of all students and even parents and teachers. Thank you all for listening to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne. Please do remember that this is a medical information show. It does not substitute for discussing your concerns with your medical provider. And please tune in again next month on November 3rd, when we'll be talking about Alzheimer's disease and the importance of caregiving with author Mary Moreland. Mary's book, The Gap Between Loving and Supporting Someone with Alzheimer's Disease, outlines her journey as a caregiver to her mother. This is 88.5 KRFY, Community Radio for North Idaho.